This is Perry Marshall. I'm here with R.C. Peck, and I encountered R.C. Peck through Joshua Boswell. And Joshua's a up-and-coming copywriter. He's experienced a considerable amount of success in the last few years, and, you know, compared to bologna sandwiches and ramen soup, which was what it was before, he found that all of a sudden having money and having clients and all that kind of stuff was kind of a shock to his system. Well, I can relate to that. You know, when I went from barely scraping by to all of a sudden doing pretty well, it was kind of shocking for me. And as much as I liked it, it was still an adjustment. And it's an adjustment you need to make whether you've already succeeded or whether you're about to. So I thought, well, let's get R.C. Peck on the line. I encountered some of his material. I really liked it. And so I said, you know, let's get an interview with this guy. So, R.C., welcome.
Hey, Perry.
I'm really glad you're here. So, R.C. is a ex-commodities broker from Wall Street who's now a certified financial planner. And as a financial planner, he does not sell financial products, which is what most of his brethren do. And, R.C., there's an interesting story of how that came to be. Could you share it with everybody?
Yeah, it's it kind of answers the question why I do what I do. So when I was I grew up in the Midwest. Actually, I grew up in northwest suburb of Chicago, Barrington.
Oh,
and
okay.
You know, interesting growing up in a town where most people are rich, or at least that's what it feels like. Yeah. And we weren't. Both my parents worked. And I was a senior in high school, and I came home after work, after school. And both my parents were home, which was really odd because they both usually weren't home because they both worked. But not only were they home, but they were sitting in the living room and they were crying. And I thought for sure something bad happened to one of my sisters, both of which were in college. So it turned out it wasn't that bad. It was just that their financial advisor had embezzled all of their money and all of my sister's money, both of them, all of them. All the money was gone.
Wow.
Only reason he didn't get my money is because 2 years before that, I started personally investing in the stock market. So I lost my own money on my own. but yeah, so when I was 17, my parents had all of 100% of their wealth stolen by their financial advisor, which, incidentally, they liked and trusted. And as a 17-year-old brain, like, how do you steal, like, the entire wealth of someone else? Like, you don't think those things. You're not supposed to think those things when you're 17. But yeah, my dad was 50. My mom was 47. I had two sisters in college, and I was going to college in 4 months. And so this really shaped and imprinted on me, maybe things aren't what they appear to be. I didn't think my parents were dumb or stupid. Later, you know, because I've been asking myself the same questions my entire life about this, but it turns out that a lot of people had the same strategy that my parents had, which was that one of the most used strategies in the world is I trust and like my advisor. And that's what they used, and that turned out to kind of wipe them out.
Yeah.
So I wanted to figure this out. Once I graduated, I actually graduated college with an Asian studies major, lived in Asia for a few years. And when I came back, I was a commodity trader, learned very quickly that I didn't really like Wall Street. I didn't like what they were doing, what they were up to. It felt bad.
Yeah.
And that kind of set me on this path of, wow, if I could have gone back and stopped this guy from stealing or allowing my parents to have all their money embezzled, that would be a pretty good career. That would be pretty nice to be able to help people in the world not get hurt as bad as my parents got hurt. And it's kind of funny, Perry, because I used to go to these financial advisor meetings, you know, once a month. They bring in a speaker. There's like 100 advisors. They talk. And whenever I always hoped it wouldn't get to me, like, what do you do, RC? Because not all advisors do the same thing. And I'm like, gosh, I hope they don't ask me. because I knew when I told them they would get confused. And what I would tell them is, well, I have an investment education company. You know, people pay me to get educated about how money really works. And everyone at the table would be like, oh yeah, we all do that too. We do that, but we don't charge for that. And then, you know, I'd say to them, well, how do you guys make your money? Oh, well, we sell annuities and mutual funds. I said, well, see, at the end of your sales process, at the end of your education is a sales process, or maybe your education is part of your sales process. And I don't, like, at the end, they're getting an autonomous life, an ability to grow or protect their money, you know, autonomously, knowing what they should do or shouldn't do. And after a couple of those conversations, Perry, you can kind of understand how I'd be the guy at the table in the back that no one wanted to sit with because they didn't really know or get what I was doing. And I had stopped going to those years ago.
Right. Not one of us.
Yeah. We don't understand him, so... well, you know what it was even? It wasn't that they didn't understand me. I think it actually kind of angered them because here they are, and I used to say, well, you're not being objective. I mean, how can you be objective when your mortgage is connected to how many annuities you sell?
Right.
And, wow, that was the wrong thing to say. No. We're very objective. I said, well, how did you make your money last year? I sold annuities to everyone you helped was through annuity. Yeah. I said, well, gosh, I have to say to you, that doesn't feel objective or unbiased. Now, maybe some of those people needed them. Maybe some of them didn't need them, but like the tool you got to sell them or the tool you used was the same tool for everyone. And that just, and you know, I'm hopefully a little, you know, I'm probably not smarter these days, but I at least don't go to those meetings anymore. And that's how it felt to me, Perry, because look, if you just sell annuities and that's how you solve people's problems, well, statistically speaking, I'm talking statistically, all those people that purchased annuities did not need them. Because there's no probability that every single one of them needed them. There isn't. I think that probability is zero.
All you got is a hammer. Right. So
I'm going to use a hammer. So yeah. That's how I got into this.
Now, when I first went through some of your material, what I liked was your discussion of the critter brain, or what I would probably myself call the lizard brain. So could you tell us about how the critter lizard brain sabotages the financial goals that we think that our conscious brain has, but maybe really doesn't?
And it's not just financial. I mean, it shows up all over life. And so even when I'm saying financial, anyone listening can go business or marriage or relationship or job. Like it shows up all over the place. I happen to have focused on the financial. The thing that got me into this is I would learn things. I would learn things about investing. I'd go to every investment course I could possibly afford or go to, and I'd fly all over the country going to them. And I started asking people, is this your first one? And they said, oh, no, I've been to 3 or 4 of these. Oh, they're great. Or I've been to these, and they're discussing all of them like they were trading cards. Like, do you have the Robinson and the Ruth? And then I started asking about their results. And only after I built a whole lot of rapport and no one else was standing around them, they basically say they weren't doing well. They were meeting friends, making, you know, getting excited about trades or options, whatever, but their actual results were bad. And I was like, well, I'm kind of having the same experience. Why is that? Like, how is it that knowledge isn't the answer? Knowledge isn't really power. That's what I was hearing myself say. And, you know, I started going down that road. I started reading books on babies and how their brains are formed and how people's beliefs are created and behaviors are created. And I got into this thing called NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, because that talked about these things called behaviors and beliefs. And it started answering these questions for me. And I learned that there's actually two parts to a brain, or really there's two brains for men or women.
Yeah.
The first one we all think of is like our prefrontal lobes. That's right behind your forehead. Well, your other brain is called your R complex. That's actually what it's called. It sits on top of your brain stem. It's the oldest part of the brain. And, you know, most people in the last 10 years have been calling it the critter brain or the animal brain or the lizard brain. But it's the part of the brain that's been around the longest. And what's interesting about the critter brain is it pretty much asks itself one question. Like from the moment that that sperm and that egg hit, it's been asking one question to itself. And if it doesn't come back with the exact answer it wants, it does something very interesting. So the question it's been asking itself literally forever is one of two things. Can I survive this?
Yeah.
Now it's scan right now as you and I are speaking or people are listening, it's literally scanning the room or the bus or wherever and literally saying, can I survive this?
Can I survive my interview with R.C. Peck?
Exactly. or it's saying, am I safe? Now, it's the same question. It just depends on how the brain is designed. Either can I survive this or am I safe?
Okay.
So as the brain goes through and it scans, and it's been scanning forever. If the answer comes back anything but yes, I can survive this or yes, I'm safe. Because if it comes back anything than that, the critter brain immediately starts getting the human out of that situation. It literally moves its attention, makes it tired, makes it yawn, gets it angry, has it move somewhere else. Because I'm in danger. Because remember Bob, that guy like 10,000 years ago whose critter brain was like, is that thing over there dangerous? Is it not gone? Like he was eaten by the thing with the big teeth. So
right.
Like all the critter brains in the world that practiced surviving or practiced being safe, they're gone. They did not make it. They've been gone for thousands of years.
Right.
But the people who stayed around said, anytime there's any teeny bit of doubt, I'm getting out of here. Now, you know, that is that critter brain is independently owned and operated from the other part of the brain. So it doesn't care consciously or theoretically or obviously if what they're doing isn't actually going to hurt them. The critter brain is simply saying, can I survive this or am I safe? The imprinting that happens in the critter brain happens from basically conception to 3 years old. So it's about 42 months. The first 42 months of a person's life, the critter brain is figuring out what it can survive and what is safe. And the critter brain does not have a clock on the wall. Like it doesn't know that you're 30 or 40 or 50 or 60. It just knows I learned these things in the first 42 months. I learned them from my parents. And this is what is safe to me and this is what I can survive. So if you were born in the county called Never Enough and Life is a Struggle, and then when you were 20 or 30 or 40 or 50, you started learning about investing or learning about growing money or making more money or online marketing or anything, and if that was not congruent to your critter brain's what is survivable list or what is safe list, that person can literally go their entire life collecting information, getting knowledgeable, like truly knowledgeable. I'm not disrespecting their knowledge, but they're collecting knowledge. And every time they go to do something, the critter brain goes, whoa, this is not safe. I don't know what you're about to do, but I'm getting you out of here. I'm going to make you tired. I'm going to make you yawn. I'm going to get you angry. I'm going to do something to move your attention because what you're about to do, I have never survived before. Because the critter brain doesn't have a clock. It could be something as simple as turning on AdWords, something as simple as buying a stock that's already doing what you want it to do.
Well, it occurs to me, like all kinds of things are going through my mind as you're talking here, that this could apply to just like any belief system. It could be... I'm a Republican and all these people are Democrats. Flee, flee.
What they're saying is very dumb. What you're saying, exactly. We will find the reason, sometimes consciously, sometimes other than, to say why what's happening is not good. But we're doing it emotionally, not like financially.
Right.
Right? Because what if you were a Democrat and I was a Republican, and what you were saying was actually really what was best for me?
Right. What if it was true?
Or true. But my career brain's going, this is leading somewhere that could potentially get me hurt.
Right.
And so we will get angry or overwhelmed or like that's the way that it will feel in our bodies. But what is actually happening, deep down, is the critter brain saying, I've never survived this. Your parents have never survived this. Your grandparents have never survived this. Your great-grandparents have never survived this. And guess what? We're not practicing surviving life. So we're out of the room. In fact, we're in the car telling someone how silly those people were in the room. How silly they were.
Right.
And probably that person on the other end of the phone has a similar type critter brain, so much so they go, oh, I can't believe you were even in that room. How'd you get out of there alive?
Well, so let's say it's the fall of 2008 and the stock market starts going down, down, down. And would you agree a lot of people in times like that, they start doing really stupid things?
Well, people, so I'm smiling because one, I want to say yes. Second, I want to go, it's never stupid. It's always based on what they can survive. So let me give you an example. Let me say a couple things. When do you think the safest time for someone to buy a stock is? Like just a normal human, when is the safest time for that brain to buy that stock?
We didn't script this, so you're going to get my best guess, right?
And your best guess, best guess.
My best guess is...
Can't be wrong.
It's almost when they don't care about it.
Which I agree, which is what you're saying is it's the safest time to when they feel the safest,
right,
is when they're going to buy it, which means they buy. Like if you're an animal, you're going to do something when every other animal is doing it. So that means when every other human is buying Cisco is at the very top, because that's the most amount of people who are buying. Mm. So the critter brain scans the world and goes, wow, everyone's buying now. January 1st, 2000, everyone's buying. And so this then feels the safest, or the most survivable to the human brain, says, I'm going to go buy Cisco. And they, because it feels safest. Mm-hmm. And so the brain will simply sort for what feels the safest. So in 2008, it depends who they were sorting for. Most people, again, we were already out of the market in January of 2008, so none of my clients got hurt by what happened. I live in America. I know it hurt a lot of people. Most people would just sort for what others were doing. So some sold at the bottom because that's the second most safe time to sell. The first is the highest. The second safest is the lowest, which is the reason it bottomed is because everyone was selling.
Yeah.
To that point. And so people do what feels the safest and they scan their world and say, because even if everyone else was losing 50% of their money, if all the zebra are running and your critter brain says run when the zebras run,
yeah,
if you don't really have to, it feels the safest to the critter brain. Now, the thing is, it's very painful financially. That's very upsetting financially. But to the critter brain, it goes, hey, I did my job. I'm still here. The chest is still moving in and out. I'm breathing.
Sigh of relief.
On a baseline level, yes. On a human level, oh, this is really, really painful.
I remember when I left my Delbert Cube job, and I had these stock options that they let me sell, and I had 3 months to sell them, and it had to be sold within this window, and so the stock would go up and down and up and down every single day, and I'm just trying to guess as best I can when's a good time to sell some shares and when's a good time to be hanging on, uh-huh. Right? And it's all very relative. So it's, you know, Perry's first experience with stock trading, I guess. Uh-huh. And I just noticed, I mean, this was a lot of money. At least to me it was. And I just noticed how incredibly emotional I was about this. I was obsessing about it, and I was realizing that... I'll tell you where I kind of realized how irrational I was. I realized, I was like, oh, well, I got to hang on to this until the stock goes up a little bit or goes down a little bit, and I'm within this three-month window, and it's getting to the end, and I'm getting really nervous because, well, you know, I got some of the stock left. Am I going to get the most for it? One day it occurred to me that it was no different for me to have that. I could sell all my stock today at a not very good price, and I could buy some other stock tomorrow, and it would be no different. In other words, the 3 months really didn't have anything to do with anything. Because if I wanted to sell it all right now, I could sell it all right now, and I would have a certain amount of money, and I could just turn around and buy some other stock, and I could still ride the emotional roller coaster in any way I wanted to. And it was like, wow, it took me a long time to figure this out. Wow, I am really in lizard brain mode here, right? Because I was so emotionally attached to this stock, and... like, I'm checking Yahoo Finance every 10 minutes, right?
Uh-huh.
And it was just, so I know what you're talking about. And what you're talking about applies to, I think it applies to anything that you think might change your reality, even if it's really great.
Yeah. And the rub is the... consciously, we know it actually can't hurt us, right? I mean, it really can't hurt you to buy a stock that's already going up. It really can't hurt you. I mean, I'm talking like physically, like it really can't hurt you to turn on your AdWords account.
Right.
But your critter brain doesn't know that. And there's no clock next to it going, well, you're 40 now. Well, you're 50 now. So, you know, we know this isn't really true.
Hmm. Yeah, when people get threatened, they suddenly become 3 years old.
Absolutely.
That's why you see grown men throwing a tantrum in a meeting. Right? Well, he's just 3 years old. Don't. Yeah. So is the critter brain the source of people creating their own self-sabotage?
The short answer is yes. And I would say to the critter brain, there's nothing sabotaging about it. It's all survival. But to the human brain, it absolutely shows up as, why do I keep doing that? Hmm. Because it does show up as a sabotage. Like, why would I can't believe I just said that to that person. You know, things we consciously know we shouldn't do shows up to us consciously as sabotaging, and to our critter brain goes, whew, that was a close one.
So how do you override the critter brain? I mean, most of us don't even know that it's taken over.
That it's there.
Right.
So this has been a question of mine for the last decade. We're not going to get rid of that part of our brain sitting on top of our brainstem. Not going to happen. But I found there's things someone can do. I don't want to say distract, but it's almost like you distract your critter brain so it knows one of two things. Either it knows, well, one, either it's distracted, or it goes, no, I'm safe. So one of the things that absolutely calms the critter brain down is clarity. I'm a big mountain biker, and I live in the Bay Area now, and I go biking in the Santa Cruz Mountains, and I bike out the same way each week. And there's these two logs that have fallen that make it look like it's an 8-foot brown bear. Now, I've been biking for 5 years in the Bay Area. And I know that's not an 8-foot brown bear, but I do know I'm in a forest. And even though a brown bear hasn't been sighted in like 50 years on a peninsula, my critter brain doesn't get to practice it not being a brown bear. So every time I go up that, there's a moment. There's just a moment of like, is it one? But imagine if I was biking out and there was no forest. It was deforested. I mean, all the trees were gone. All the weeds were gone. It was complete clarity from where I was to my car. And whatever miles it was, 1 mile, 5 miles, 10 miles, but my critter brain could see in complete clarity that there was nothing around, that nothing could hurt me. Well, it turns out you can do the same thing financially, businessly, anythingly. Like, is when the critter brain has clarity, it's not feeling like it needs to protect you from a made-up 8-foot-high bear.
I relate to that. When I had just got out on my own in my business, in order to calm myself down, because it was scary, I made this like list of 12 different things I could do for money. Okay, if number one doesn't work, I'm going to do number two. And if number two doesn't work, I'm going to do number three. And it did calm me down. It kept my lizard brain from freaking out. So that's good.
Well, I think the reason why is because your critter brain said, oh, well, we've got 12 miles. We've got 12 miles before I really need to be asking myself, can I survive this? Because, like, I mean, imagine you're in the middle of 100 miles of a cement parking lot. You're right in the middle of it, and you can see for 50 miles. You know, you had your 12 ways to make money, which calmed your critter brain down because it was very clear that it wasn't going to get hurt. And so the thing I've noticed, and I mean, one of the things that I teach my clients is when someone has financial clarity, whatever that may mean, we don't need to go into, but when they have that, the critter brain almost immediately goes, oh, that's nice. And clarity is not collecting. Like, a lot of people collect information. That's not clarity. Like, I meet a lot of people who do, and I have nothing against Quicken or Microsoft Money or Mint.com. But that's collecting information. That's not the same thing as having financial clarity. But to answer your question, because I just want to stay on topic, is when someone has clarity, their critter brain calms down and it has very low probability of now, you know, sabotaging the person. It has very low probability of saying, oh my gosh, we're in danger. Get the heck out of here.
That's very good. So, what do you do if you know you want to grow your money or grow your business and you know that you can't turn yourself into Mr. Spock?
You're not a Vulcan? Is that what you're saying?
Not a Vulcan.
Well, you know, and Spock was only half Vulcan.
Oh, that's right.
You know, he was half Earthling. So if you're human and born on planet Earth, you're probably not a Vulcan. So what I say to my clients is, you know, I often say to them, I have this investment course, and one of the first things I say in the investment course is say, okay, you have a choice. Do you want your money to grow or do you want to be a good investor? And I hold up my left hand for, do you want your money to grow? And I hold my right hand, do you want to be a good investor? And about 80% immediately get that. They go, you know what? I actually don't care if I'm a good investor. I just want my money to grow. And about 20% go, I've paid you a lot of money. I'm here to be a good investor. So our brains are not designed to grow or protect money. They are not. That's not a normal thing. Right? I mean, general consensus amongst anthropologists is the current human brain is about 130,000 years old. Well, up to like 1960, like literally like 40, 50 years ago, we didn't need to know how to grow money. Because we were born, we tried not to get killed, we got married, we worked, we tried not to get killed, and then we retired, and then we died. So at no point was there this part called, we need to grow money. I mean, even in the 60s, the average male, after he retired, died 4 years later. So as life expectancy has increased to about 80, and pensions have gone away, we have started to figure out, well, we need to do something for food and clothing and shelter. And that's typically something around growing or protecting money. But that is a absolutely brand new concept to humans. Literally 1980, the 401k started. Before that, the collective consciousness of humans never needed to know how to grow money. So the first thing I tell my clients, or almost anyone who will listen, and this is not a negative way, is, don't look to yourself for the answer. don't think your brain actually knows what to do because it has no idea what you're doing. Maybe in like 5,000 years, it may be like, oh yeah, grow money. But 40 years in, no. So the first thing I say is stop looking to yourself. You know, stop looking to ourselves for the answer because all we're going to do is look to our critter brain and see what we can survive. So that's the first thing. And I'm not like a negative Nancy or anything like that, but it seems to really work when you stop making it about yourself and you start making it like, hey, what's best for my money? Like, what's the best thing I can do? What has a high probability of working from a money point of view? And then I'll manage those emotional issues that come up. Like in 2004, just an example, Perry, I told my clients that there's a high probability, like a really, really, really high probability that gold's going to go up for the next 10 to 15 years. Because I'm a market historian. I study markets, you know, back 100 years. I look at them. I check the probability of something working or not working. I say, you know what? There's a very, 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 very high probability that we need to own gold because it's going up. And so when I said this to my clients in 2004, it's like I told them to violate some deeply held belief about anything. Because, and I remember this really clearly, said, RC, no one's doing this. Huh. Who are you? Wait, you're not JP Morgan. You're not Morgan Stanley. I've liked you up to this point, RC, but why would you tell me to shoot a gun pointed at someone? Like, it was really that. It was very visceral and it was very acute. Like, you're telling me to do something that is dangerous to my health or wealth or future. Well, because I'd been working with my clients for a while, they knew this was happening. They said, oh my gosh, you said I may say some stuff to you that's really good for your money, but may feel really bad to me. And I'm having that experience right now. And it's real. Like, I really don't like you right now. This is a real experience. But because I'd been working with them, they're like, oh, that's right. What is best for our money oftentimes feels worst or feels really, really bad to the human's money. And so that bifurcation, that separation of there's me and then there's my money, and they're two separate entities and they follow two separate rules. A person's money has no critter brain.
Right.
It follows a set of rules. And you either have your money aligned with those rules or be in congruent with those rules, or you don't. And it really is that simple. Now, we humans are really not that simple.
I decide, well, all right, I'm going to go to other places besides my own self for money of advice, but how do I keep my critter brain from not freaking out when the other person tells me something? aren't we just chasing our tail here? Like, well, okay, so let's move it over to here. So let's move over. There's an underlying thing that I think you might be trying to get to here.
Well, the first, I mean, if we look to ourselves, so let me think about this. Growing your money doesn't necessarily feel good.
Okay.
Until you're really into it, until you're years into it, like you've passed Chicago, but man, getting to Chicago felt really bad. And it didn't start feeling good until you like got to San Francisco and on the plane to Hawaii, and then you start going, you know what? That wasn't that bad. But, I mean, I don't know how else to say it. Growing and protecting money, growing a business, protecting it, it's the same thing, right?
Yes.
Growing a marriage, protecting it, it's the same thing. It oftentimes doesn't, it feels bad. Forget about not feel good. It feels wrong. It feels bad. It feels I'm in danger. And when that person looks around and goes, but no one else is buying gold in 2004. And humans are allowed to be many, many things, but they're not allowed to be crazy. And what I mean by that is a human can say, gosh, I'm so stupid. oh, I was so silly then. Or I was so short-sighted. Or I was so overwhelmed. Or I was so whatever. But you will rarely hear someone say, I am crazy. Because that's one of the states a human's never allowed to be. And so they'll justify it. They'll go, well, he must be crazy. Or if it was so good, RC, how come no one else is doing it? And this isn't like what my clients think, because they've kind of understood the critter brain and how growing money actually doesn't feel good at first. But even along the way, I mean, I have a client who lives in France, and they email me every 6 months, and they say, should I sell my gold? Should I sell my winning stock? Whatever it is that's going up, like it kind of triggers them again, like, whoa, I've already made X percentage. Now's the time, right, RC? Because it's still they're still human.
So what you're saying is the success zone is always uncomfortable.
Someone needs to learn how to manage their discomfort. Yeah. Because as soon as someone gets comfortable, I have the experience that they've stopped growing. Or their business has stopped growing. Or it's just the beginning. It's like the top of the hill and they're going to coast down. And for a while, like, oh, I'm coasting, but coasting is always downhill. So there's almost always a level of discomfort in the success zone.
Well, I agree. And I've come to understand that there's an uncomfortable feeling that I now know means I'm headed in the right direction.
Hey, I'm probably going to make some more money, or I'm probably going to grow my business this year.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, you know, the procrastination demons start rearing their ugly heads. I start putting things off. I start spacing off. It's exactly what you said. The critter brain says, don't pay attention to that. Why don't you have a little lapse of attention? And I think that happens any time we interrupt the momentum of the direction we're already going in. And so you can't become more successful coasting, right?
And it feels like you can at the very first, but you can't coast uphill.
Right.
You can't even coast flat.
Right.
And so getting back to one of your previous questions, it's the discomfort is the indicator. And I mean within the context of what's working, because look, people were discomforted or uncomfortable in 2008. So I'm not talking about the right type of uncomfortableness. I mean,
yeah.
Sometimes you really should be uncomfortable.
Sure.
But assuming appropriate rules are being followed and you're not violating the rules of money, that this discomfort is actually an indicator that things are going well.
Well, that's great. Well, RC, you've got a 10 most dangerous thoughts to your financial well-being podcast. Could you explain a little more about that?
Yeah, of course.
What that's all about?
So, you know, one of the first places I usually start when I work with someone is what they believe to be true, or what their behaviors are, not even their actions. And it always comes down to thoughts or beliefs or behaviors. And so over the years, I've been writing like, oh, they're doing that behavior or they have that belief. And I put a podcast series together called The 10 Most Dangerous Thoughts to Your Money. And the reason I did is because I wanted people to see if they saw themselves in some of these thoughts they were having that they actually thought were helping them, but in fact, we're actually hurting them. And so it's a podcast series, The 10 Most Dangerous Thoughts to Your Money. I mean, there's probably many dangerous things, thoughts we have.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, over the last 20 years, these are the ones that I hear the most, or they come up the most 3D, or they're the ones when people say them. Perry, the thing is, closely held beliefs do not show up as closely held beliefs. They show up as, this is how it really works, and don't tell me otherwise. There really is a fill in the blank. It doesn't show up as a belief to them, because it's how they really experience life. So the 10 Most Dangerous Thoughts to Your Money, I put that together – And I have a section on my site dedicated to people in your community. And I'll send you the link, but I'll also tell you what it is. It's fearlesswealth.com/Perry.
fearlesswealth.com/Perry.
And your world can go there, and they can get that podcast series and start seeing if they see themselves in any one of those or all of them.
I really think that a lot of what holds people back is some level of lizard brain terror of some kind. And it's like you said, it could be your investments, but it could also be your regular business. It could be your relationships. It could be your marriage. Like, if you've been married for 20 years and it hasn't really been a very good marriage, having a good one could be a little terrifying. It's definitely going to shift some things in your life, right?
I mean, there's a reason why we often see movies about the beautiful person marrying the bad person over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
We all sit in the audience going, why do they do that? Why do they do that? Well, it's survivable.
Yeah.
It's unpleasant. You know, but it's survivable from their critter brain. So it right on, Perry, whether it's with relationships or with a business or with health. But the interesting thing is, people won't actually die if they go from not growing money to growing money. I mean, it may feel like they, you know, are down that path. I don't mean like they'll have a small heart attack. I mean, it's just that old wiring, that 100,000-year-old wiring saying, I was born in the county called Struggle.
So, RC, why don't you take maybe one last swipe at how we get our lizard brain and our thinking brain to cooperate. So, okay, we understand that it's one thing to know that, oh, I'm uncomfortable. I'm supposed to be uncomfortable. That's what success feels like. But it's another thing to keep our lizard brain from somehow bungling it up anyway, even if we knew that we were headed in the right direction. Could you tell me a little bit about what you've learned to really get that lizard brain to calm down, even when it's never done this before? And anything you want to say?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things. The lizard brain and the human brain are independently owned and operated.
Okay.
So they will never get along. But I know the context of your question. How do we have them work together, or how do we have one stop hurting the other one?
Yeah.
The critter brain will always override anything else. So I think the first place we look, and I mentioned this before, the first thing is clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, in the context of money, one of the things I have my clients do is I have them literally write out all of their investments, just on a pen and paper. What do you own? Because the conscious brain, so here's one thing that someone can do. The conscious brain can only handle 7 things at once, plus or minus 2. So anywhere between 5 and 9 things the conscious brain can handle.
Okay.
Imagine if you go into your portfolio and you have 67 stocks. Now, you already don't want to be in there, but very quickly your conscious brain is going to get extremely overwhelmed, stressed, and anxious. So there's a set of rules people can follow in regards to their money. One of the rules that I have my clients follow is usually eliminating most of their investments. There's this belief out there that you have to be diversified, but we have way over-diversified ourselves to the point of overwhelmed and confusion. So number one, gaining clarity in a way where the conscious brain can handle things. Because you can gain absolute clarity, but if you're trying to manage 12 things at once, the brain will shut the human brain will shut down because it can only handle 7 at once plus or minus 2. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I want to do this both in kind of the money world and the business world, so there's that overlap. We want to take 15 steps at once. What I often see is, someone's eating bologna. They've got the bologna. They buy it by the 5 pounds. Yeah. They've got the meat cutter. They're cutting the bologna. And they want to go from that to top shelf filet mignon $90 steak.
Yeah.
And they want to do it in one step. And the reason they want to do it in one step is because now they're 40, now they're 50, now they're 60. They're looking back saying, I don't have time. I don't have time. And they're attempting to close the gap. And that's a low probability move. And so maybe the second thing I could say is do what has the highest probability, because one successful step begets the next one faster, begets the next one and the next one and the next one. And before you know it, you actually don't need to fill the gap. You just need to walk around it. But people don't want to walk around it because they say, I don't have time to walk around it. I gotta jump this 50-foot gap. And remember that one guy who made it? Well, I'm better looking than him.
Well, that's almost the lizard brain again. It's getting all revved up when you need to be calm.
When you need to be calm and say, I slow down to speed up, it would be another way.
Oh, that's good. I like that.
Yeah. We think we need to put the car in fifth gear and drive 130 miles an hour. And what as you say, do you even know what direction you're going? No, but I'm passing cars. But that gives them the feeling that they're going somewhere. Because look at all the cars they're passing.
Yeah,
I say, let's pull over at the rest stop. I don't have time to pull over at the rest stop.
That's
so
good.
Maybe that's, I'm just kind of thinking these, people need to slow down to speed up. I've never taught day trading or option trading or currency trading because those are the things that I've noticed people do to kind of, I got to catch up. I got to make back my 10 years. And look, I'm all for making sure the last 10 years doesn't happen for the next 10 years, but it's typically not going to happen in this like speeding up frame.
And then just
one last thing. As lame as this sounds, Perry, and it does sound kind of lame, and most people are like, are you kidding me? That's the third thing? That's the best you got for me? Is some sort of accountability from someone who's not married to you or connected to you and who knows the rules, either knows the rules of business or knows the rules of money, and they are doing it in their life. Not like they've read every book about it, but they're experiencing it and surviving it in their life. And so when they're making that other person accountable, they can actually, and this is something interesting about humans. Humans can initially sort for sabotaging behaviors when they're not doing it because they'll go, oh, I used to do that. He's about to go do that. So a lot of times people get accountable to someone who's not doing it either. Because maybe that person is free or not as much money. But having accountability from someone who can call you out on, oh, your critter brain's about to take over. Or, so the rules to money, there's 5 rules to money. You've broken 4 in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah. That's what mastermind groups are for.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and so do you want to break the 5th one, or should we just start at the beginning and do them all correctly?
Yeah. Hey, RC, this has been great. Again, I want to direct people to the 10 Most Dangerous Thoughts to Your Money podcast. It's at fearlesswealth.com/Perry. RC, great conversation. Really appreciate your lizard brain insights. And, let's all have some degree of cooperation between these different parts of ourselves. How about?
Sounds good. Hey, Perry, thanks so much. I appreciate the questions and the clarity of the questions. So thank you.
Hey, thank you. Talk to you later.
All right, bye.
Bye.